Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
Across West Africa, there are some countries that have digressed from being democratic countries to now having authoritarian or military regimes. In Ghana here, I don't think that's likely to happen because everything here has been smooth. The way people talk about the elections, the way people talk about the smooth transfer of power, Ghana has led by example, and I think it's going to continue to do that.
Ghanaians are voting to choose a new president and parliament.
Gambians overwhelmingly are disappointed because the main reason we wanted change in 2016 is to change the legal architecture of the country, because there were many bad laws, such as the Public Order Act and also things that criminalize defamation and others. So the constitution has been very paramount for Gambians, but unfortunately, I don't think this government is serious about bringing in a new constitution per the aspirations of the Gambians.
A new poll shows a majority of Gambians say they need a new constitution.
The core problem is state graft and state capture. The ruling SPLM is not willing to either share government in good faith, in genuine terms, or misled to believe that they can continue to control the state regardless of the disagreements of so many people in South Sudan, regardless of the suffering that it has inflicted on the country in terms of corruption and in terms of violence. I think this is what will make this peace agreement yet again similar to the ones that have been signed and were not implemented in the past.
And South Sudanese peace talks resume in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Ghanaians are voting today to choose a new president and parliament. Analysts say the presidential contest is expected to be competitive between candidates from the governing New Patriotic Party, or NPP, and the main opposition National Democratic Congress, the NDC. Polls show a tight race between the two leading candidates, incumbent Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia of the NPP and former President John Dramani Mahama. VOA's polling duo is on assignment to cover the elections in Ghana. He joins us from the capital, Accra. Hello, Paul. What's the latest as you visit some of the polling centers?
I've been here at Accra Art Center, one of the biggest polling stations, and people are voting, coming in. Everything has been smooth so far, so we can't wait to see the results later.
What are the two leading contenders talking about? And from your observation during the campaign, what were the responses of prospective voters ahead of the election?
It's been about jobs, 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 and growing the economy. Take, for example, both presidential candidates, the two leading presidential candidates, have a vision for Ghana. The ruling party, which is led by Mahamudu Bawumia, has been talking about a digital economy, an economy that is going to take Ghana to the next level. You also have young people. A lot of young people are connected digitally. So they are trying to tap into that to make sure that these young people are heard, are seen, and they are represented when it comes to jobs. So most young people now, they get these digital jobs. So they are trying to tap into that. And now, on the other hand, John Mahama, who is the front bearer for NDC, political party, is also talking about a 24-hour economy, which literally means that they are trying to introduce a system that we have like in the United States or that has worked in Europe, where people almost work 24/7. People work in shifts. So that's a conversation that every one of these candidates has been trying to use to rally support and get votes on this election day.
Did the Electoral Commission say when the results will begin trickling in? And so far, what has been the organization like in administering the elections today?
To be honest with you, I've been to about 6 polling stations since morning. Everything opened at 7 o'clock, and it's been smooth. I've been to, like, especially where I am right now, I'm at Accra at a center. I've not seen any issues regarding ballot boxes, regarding disorganization. The polling agents are all in check. Everybody is coming in. They are voting, doing their and they're excited to be part of this process. I've talked to a couple young people here who are excited about the possibility of Ghana leading the rest of West Africa, because they talk about how, let's say, coups in some parts of West Africa have disrupted that that democracy in some of those places. So they don't want to see that happen here in Ghana. One of the young guys who I talked to, for him, he was very, very particular about what he wanted out of this election. He told me he wants peace. He's preaching peace. He's saying that people should exercise their votes without worry or fear of this vote turning into violence.
Paul, talking about security, how are police officers around the polling stations that you have been to reacting to the ongoing voting process?
The difference between, let's say, some countries that I've covered and Ghana is night and day. I've been to several polling stations since morning. There is a semblance of peace and stability, and security is very, very relaxed. There is police presence, but you don't see them. They're just standing by. They're just there, you know, just watching over the process. That's about it. Nothing major. But to your point again, this election is very important in a sense that across West Africa, there are some countries that have digressed from being democratic countries to now having authoritarian or military regimes. In Ghana here, I don't think that's likely to happen, because everything here has been smooth. The way people talk about the elections, the way people talk about the smooth transfer of power, Ghana has led by example, and I think it's going to continue to do that.
Viewers, Paul Ndio is on assignment to cover the elections in Ghana. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. Ghanaians are expected to choose between the two leading candidates to determine who is best placed to resolve the country's challenges. Key among the issues is the economy and the standard of living. Incumbent Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia and former President John Dramani Mahama are expected to stand out in the presidential contest. For more about the issues Ghanaians are considering as they vote, I reached Rhoda Osei-Afo. She is a senior research analyst at the Center for Democratic Development, or CDD, in Ghana.
I think I will draw from the Afrobarometer findings, which recently came out and looked at some of the issues or the most important problems. Basically, if you look at the data, unemployment sort of topped the list of issues that for many Ghanaians mattered most to them, right? So if you look at the findings, 41% of Ghanaians says unemployment was an issue. And then that was followed by infrastructure, right? And then you have health and education. I must say that the political parties, the candidates, these are also issues that they have been focusing on their campaigns. Kodi observers who have been on the ground monitoring the pre-election environment have been sending reports about the substantive issues that the political parties, the candidates have been focusing on. And you realize that from the data, the two leading candidates, especially the two leading parties, have been focused on unemployment, on education, on corruption, on infrastructure. So I would say, yes, these are the issues that will be the focus of many Ghanaians. The economy, of course, is also one of them.
Looking at how these leading two key presidential candidates have been campaigning, what has been the responses of prospective voters to their messaging ahead of the elections?
It's been quite interesting if you look at the front runners, right? For the main opposition party, you have the former president running on the tickets of the NDC, and then for the ruling party, you have the sitting vice president. Now, if you compare the campaigns of the two parties, it's looking at the track records of each of these candidates, right? So extension their government. So the previous government under the NDC or Mr. John Mahama, who is now the candidate of the NDC, Vice President Bawumia, who is the presidential candidate of the NPP, the ruling party. So it's more about the records, what the previous administration did, where they left off, versus what the current administration is doing and what the record is. So their campaigns also have been looking at that, comparing their track record over the years up till now. And I think these are issues that will also be on the minds of Ghanaians in terms of who have served them better, whether it's Mr. John Mahama and his previous government, or the NDC as a party, or Vice President Bawumia and the NPP.
The expectation, I am told, is that the presidential contest is going to be one of the most competitive in recent times. What say you?
Well, I mean, Ghanaian elections, I would say, have almost always been very competitive. If you look at the trend, if you look at what happened in 2008, when we went into a runoff, if you go back to the year 2000 again, when we had the first ever second runoff, I would say I'm not expecting anything so different. It's going to be very closely contested. We can expect that the two frontrunners will definitely be matching each other with food. But I strongly believe that this is going to mirror previous elections in terms of the level of competition, the intensity, of the process.
Rhoda Osei-Afol is a senior research analyst at the Center for Democratic Development, or CDD. She spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. In the Gambia, a recent poll shows a majority of citizens say the country needs a new constitution. However, they also express doubt about the commitment of political parties to the process that will lead to a new document. According to the Afrobarometer poll, among the major changes they want is a limit of two presidential terms. This, as Mohamed Ibn Chambers, a former United Nations envoy for West Africa, arrived in the country as part of negotiations for a new constitution at the National Assembly. Njie Nyang is a Gambian political analyst. He tells me that many Gambians are unhappy there will not be a new constitution ahead of the next general election.
Gambians overwhelmingly are disappointed because the main reason we wanted change in 2016 is to change the legal architecture of the country, because there were many bad laws, such as the Public Order Act, and also things that criminalize defamation and others. So the constitution has been very paramount for Gambians, but unfortunately, I don't think this government is serious about bringing in a new constitution per the aspirations of the Gambians. The major sticky point is term limits. This current president believes that, yes, he is a champion of two-term limits, but he also believes that laws are not retroactive, therefore his two terms will not count once the constitution passed. And this has been a roadblock and a stalemate.
So you don't think the constitution that the people of the Gambia want might not necessarily be put in place before the elections?
Well, we have to look at the time frame now against the election. And we know that constitution building is a process, and this process will lead to a referendum. So if you look at the time that's left now against election, the window is a bit too tight. But considering the fact that it's been almost 7.5 years going to 8, and we are yet to have a constitution, shows that it's not a priority for this administration.
An opposition leader was telling me the other time that he is not against the president seeking additional terms until a new constitution is instituted. Where do people stand from here?
Well, morality can't be legislated, and I believe not everything that is legal is not moral. I think the president should be conscientious enough to know from whence Gambia came. We came a long way, and the reason why we came a long way was because of bad laws. And just because you have a law doesn't make it good, and a bad law may be legal, but it's not moral. So he should set a better example, especially for a new Gambia that we want. Gambia decided in 2016 that the current status quo should have been a thing of the past. But unfortunately, we're still living in Gambia pre-2016. So not much has changed. We have evicted Jammeh, but the system remains the same. So it's a lose-lose for the average Gambian.
So you think the people of the Gambia want everything associated with the Yahya Jammeh regime to be scrapped?
It's not about the Yahya Jammeh regime. It's about the laws. Some of them were inherited during colonial days, like the Public Order Act, where, you know, if a group wants to protest, they need to go to the IGP to get a permit. That is not freedom of expression. We also have issues with elections. We have issues with redistricting and boundaries for National Assembly members. You look at a place like where the president is from, Fonyi, a very small place proportionally to the whole country, and you look at the number of representatives that they have. So we need a constitution to address these anomalies. So we don't want to live in the past. We want to start building a new Gambia, and we need a legal architecture that will facilitate the rebuilding of our country.
Nje Nyang is a Gambian political analyst. He spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. Stalled South Sudan peace talks in Kenya have resumed in the capital, Nairobi. The resumption follows a recent meeting between South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and Kenyan President William Ruto. The Tumaini Initiative talks, which started in May, aimed to provide a foundation for the inclusion of groups that did not sign a 2018 agreement to sustain peace in South Sudan. But local media reports say the talks stalled after Riek Machar's party withdrew, sharply disagreeing with what it says were plans by mediators to replace the 2018 peace agreement. That accord effectively ended the country's civil war. Jock Maduk Jock is a professor of anthropology at Syracuse University here in the U.S. He tells me the talks are not likely to resolve the challenges facing South Sudan.
My skeptical voice says that this is much ado about nothing, because the government delegation has come with the intention to rewrite all the protocols that have been worked on and initialed over the past 4 or 5 months. And to rework it means that they want to reduce it to a business of power sharing with the few opposition leaders there in Nairobi, rather than a comprehensive overhaul of the system, complete with the constitution and with a plan for elections at the end of the interim period. But history has shown that South Sudanese leaders on all sides of the conflicts have always come into these kinds of talks in bad faith.
So what are your expectations of this? If the history, as you said, has shown that they don't actually negotiate in good faith, irrespective of which aisle they come from.
That's right. So my expectation is twofold. One is that something will be signed and people will go back to Juba and rework the transitional coalition government to include some of these opposition leaders in the cabinet and in other various institutions of the government and the state. So that's one possibility, and that is the most likely possibility. The other possible outcome is that they will disagree over a few things, including the opposition and the stakeholders and civil society, saying that this peace agreement should be an opportunity for South Sudan to avoid ever needing another peace agreement in the future by now working on the fundamental issues of the state, including security arrangement, including some of the laws that have been in place that have terrorized the people of South Sudan, such as the National Security Law, Article 54 and 55. Say people can be arrested without warrant. And so if the government insists that they don't want to address those issues, the likelihood is that many parties to this negotiation will leave the negotiation and leaving only maybe 3 or 4 entities that will sign with the government. And that means the country will not have meaningful peace.
Talking about peace, you don't think that if an agreement is reached, the reason why the talks are ongoing is to bring lasting peace to the people of South Sudan who have endured some kind of instability in parts of the country since independence? Your take?
Obviously, any peace agreement is better than no peace agreement. And so whatever they will sign, most particularly if it is something that is going to silence the guns, then the people of South Sudan might say, okay, we can live with it, and then we can continue to work on the outstanding issues, such as the issue of constitution and elections, issues of human rights. But there are so many things that have plagued South Sudan that will not be addressed by this peace agreement. And therefore, an agreement will be an agreement on paper and will not translate itself into actual peace in the lives of everyday people. South Sudan is still now the country with probably the second largest internally displaced populations, with refugees in all the neighboring countries. These things, if they are not addressed in that peace agreement will simply be an elite pack.
Jock, yeah. What do you say to those who are always saying that South Sudanese have been here before? Several peace agreements have been signed. They seem not to work. What is the core problem?
The core problem is state graft and state capture. The ruling SPLM is not willing to either share government in good faith, in genuine terms, or misled to believe that they can continue to control the state regardless of the disagreements of so many people in South Sudan, regardless of the suffering that it has inflicted on the country in terms of corruption and in terms of violence. I think this is what will make this peace agreement yet again similar to the ones that have been signed and were not implemented in the past. It's just that the ruling cliques don't have that much interest in really letting go of certain aspects of government, so that peace can be a win-win situation.
Jock Madouk Jock is a professor of anthropology at Syracuse University. He spoke with me from New York. In Kenya, an academic is calling on Kenyan President William Ruto to launch an inquiry into reports that 20 of its police officers in Haiti have resigned over pay delays and poor conditions. Philip Chebunet, a political communications lecturer at Kenya's University of Eldoret, also says the chief of police, Douglas Kanja, must resign or be fired if the statement from the police officers in Haiti are proven to be true. His comments come after Reuters News reports that 20 of the 400-member Kenyan police officers on the UN-backed mission to restore peace in Haiti have resigned. For more, I reach Philip Chebunet.
The Kenyan government needed to have been more serious in how they handle such a very high-level mission. And I saw the president being there personally to look into their matters. So I am now wondering why their matters have not been considered. But if that has happened, then it is very unfortunate because Kenya is at the center of the mission, and Kenya had come out in the world as the country that was leading the efforts to restore peace in Haiti. So that is happening is quite unfortunate.
The National Police Chief Douglas Kanja recently addressed reports in Kenyan media of pay delays at a news conference, saying the officers had been paid up to the end of October. However, three police officers disputed this, saying they were last paid in September. Where is the truth here?
If this is confirmed that it has happened, then Douglas Kanja should resign, because dealing with the lives of our policemen in such a dangerous place and casually dismissing their plea for their welfare, it would be a height of negligence on their part if they don't deal with the affairs of those soldiers. So what happens is because as they deal with, as they combat the criminals, They need also to be treated well, because that the government to say the truth and say that there's a challenge. There will be no problem if you explain to the people and tell them that we received a challenge, people will understand, instead of just not saying the truth.
Well, some people are suggesting that the confusion could be as a result of administrative challenges, among other issues. And they are saying that a lack of pay could also be demoralizing to some of these 400 police officers, 20 of whom have tendered in their resignations.
If the government knows that there are challenges and they know that the families of these soldiers are suffering, the families depend on their sons who have gone to Haiti, it's a dangerous place, the government should say the truth. They should even pay them first before they pay the workers of this country. They need to start with those at the combat zone. So I think the government will not be doing well if they don't start with the payment of those soldiers.
Do you think there has to be an investigation to find out where the truth lies about this?
In fact, the president should act. We are approaching now the Jamhuri Day celebration on 12th of December. We want to see action. We want to see the president himself coming out as the commander-in-chief and declaring that he has sent a high-powered delegation to investigate. So I think the best thing to do, even before we celebrate our heroes on 12th, those who fought for independence, let us celebrate also the ones who have gone to Haiti and ensure that they get the best welfare.
Philip Chebunet is a political communications lecturer at the University of Eldoret. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Malawi's information minister says the latest Afrobarometer poll shows citizens support the efforts of President Lazarus Chakwera and his government to improve their living conditions. Moses Kunkunyu says the government implemented measures to ensure access to clean water, reliable electricity power supplies and education, and to improve infrastructure. His remarks follow the release of the research conducted by Afrobarometer, a non-partisan Pan-African research network. The findings also show that public dissatisfaction with the government's handling of economic challenges is making the main opposition Democratic Progressive Party, or DPP, popular ahead of the next general election. For more reaction from the government, I reach Information Minister Moses Kunkunyu.
Now, this is an indication that people are appreciating what the President Lazarus Chakwera and his government is doing in uplifting the lives of Malawians. President Chakwera came into office at a time when we were hit by a number of natural forces, the cyclones that hit us, but also were hit by an epidemic of cholera. But also this was coupled with the impacts of the COVID-19. All these culminated into global economic shocks, and this did not spare Malawi. With our already weaker economy, we were hit in a hard way, but still we navigated through the waters under the leadership of the president, making sure that there is servant leadership and ensuring that everyone is brought on board in the governance process so that they appreciate we have challenges, but embracing the programs that the president did put in place, that here we are today. Those that were affected have been fed, and we still continue to feed them. Infrastructure development is going on despite the problems that we have been through as a country.
The respondents talked about efforts to enhance water and sanitation services. What particularly did the government do that Malawians are pleased with concerning these?
When Dr. Chakwera came into government, he immediately ordered that there should be free water connection to households for domestic use. So Malawians have been having connections at no cost to their houses, but also there have been water treatment points that have been constructed and inaugurated under the president currently in the past few years. But also there is a project that is to tap water from Lake Malawi over 100 kilometers into the city of Lilongwe for onward distribution into the surrounding areas. These projects have ensured that people have access to clean water, but also those that are in the rural areas where we cannot connect to the national water supply. There is a groundwater pumping system project that is going on. So indeed, most parts of the country have now access to clean water at a reasonable cost, that is taking off the connection fee, but also the major programs that are happening, the water purification plants that have been opened, but also the project to tap water from Lake Malawi, taking it over 100 kilometers to the city of Lilongwe for supply in the city and the surrounding areas. These projects in the water and sanitation area will ensure that the population of Malawi, the citizens of Malawi, do not suffer from the cholera attacks that do hit us every year.
Overall, what is the government's reaction to the findings of the Afrobarometer poll about the performance of the Malawi government?
We always appreciate any research that is founded on principles of truth and honesty. And when a research is conducted in a manner that really hears from the people, regardless of where they are based, and it really touches on the issues that people would want to discuss, not opinions that are being driven by the researchers, we always appreciate that. So where the research has gone away from the facts on the ground, people are able to tell that this particular aspect, you are actually driving your own opinion, not what is pertaining on the ground. So we always respect the researches or surveys that are conducted, but also bear in mind that it's not a call for us to be complacent, but a call for us to work even harder and continue delivering as per the aspirations of Malawians and the leadership.
Moses Kunkunyu is Malawi's information minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Namibia's newly elected president is setting out the agenda for her coming administration, and one of the priorities may be removal of the red line, a remnant of Namibia's colonial period that divides the country in two and restricts the movement of agricultural products, especially beef, between north and south. For VOA, Vitalio Angula has this report from the Namibian capital, Windhoek.
The outbreak of cattle disease in the 1890s prompted Namibia's colonial German rulers to block the free movement of livestock between northern and southern Namibia. The practice extended into the era of South African rule, and in the 1960s, authorities built a veterinary cordon fence across the width of the country, about 1,000 kilometers long. People can cross the fence freely, but cannot transport agricultural products such as beef, fruit, and vegetables. The AR movement, a political party that finished third in last month's National Assembly elections, is currently suing the state, hoping to force the removal of the fence, commonly called the red line. The party says the government has maintained the fence to the economic disadvantage of Namibia's black population that lives mostly in the north. AR movement legislator George Kambala tells VOA the party's campaign message calling for the removal of the red line resonated with voters in the north.
They were placed because these three feasibility studies done on the red line, and all three are recommending the removal of the red line, because once you remove the red line, the agricultural sector will contribute three times what it contributes now to the economy.
Beef is one of Namibia's chief exports. In January 2024, 42% of Namibia's beef exports went to the European Union. However, this beef is only sourced south of the red line. Responding to questions posed by VOA at a press conference Thursday, Namibia's president-elect, Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, said the removal of the red line was agreed to at the country's second national conference 6 years ago. She said the issue is being hijacked by the AR movement to score political points.
It's Gen F, an economic impact. And that's why now as a government we have a plan how to get, and we have already started, how to gradually we can reach that. So that is just a chance taking, but it's a national decision.
Right now, there is no firm date for when the red line might be eliminated. Former Prime Minister Naha Sangula, who is also a commercial farmer in the south of Namibia, says removal of the red line is complicated by the fact that northern Namibian farmers sometimes graze their cattle in Angola. He says the red line, although a relic of colonial Namibia, still plays a role in assuring the European market that beef from Namibia is free from foot and mouth disease, which periodically breaks out in parts of northern Namibia.
As you know that northern Namibia is overcrowded, and some of the farmers go to graze their cattle in Angola. So if you want to open up the borders, to open up the red line, you must actually work with Angola and make sure that vaccination is carried out in Angola there, and that all the cattle, all the animals are properly vaccinated from time to time. So it's a complicated situation.
Hearings on the AR movement's lawsuit to eliminate the red line begin January 21 and are expected to last 10 days. Given the complexity of the case, judges may take several months to issue a ruling. Vitalio Angula, VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, or Africa CDC, says it is battling to identify a new disease in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has claimed at least 79 lives and infected hundreds more. For VOA, Columbus Mavunga reports from Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, where the Southern African Association of Doctors for Human Rights is calling for a regional approach to stop the disease from spreading to other countries.
Dr. Jean Kaseya, Director General of Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, told reporters Thursday from the Democratic Republic of Congo that his organization is working with Kinshasa authorities to identify the disease and its causes. Kaseya made it clear that he wants fast results from doctors, researchers, and medical organizations.
How can we accept to have 5-6 weeks of delay? It's just because the surveillance system is weak. We are still waiting to know what is going on. We don't want to see again another disease that will take 4-6 weeks before official notification. Regarding this disease X, we say we are waiting for the outcome from the lab, either tomorrow or on Saturday, to know what is going on.
The Africa CDC is calling it Disease X until lab results can reveal more. The disease was identified late October in the Panzi district of Kwango province on the border with Angola. The World Health Organization's regional office for Africa said Friday it is sending experts to help investigate. The disease causes flu-like symptoms. WHO says the cause is unknown, but it will be investigating influenza, COVID-19, malaria, or measles as possibilities. Dr. Nomeni Matara, Secretary General of the Southern African Association of Doctors for Human Rights, urged people in the Democratic Republic of Congo and the region to remain calm but improve their hygienic practices.
We also encourage the government to strengthen their surveillance at ports of entry so that unusual illnesses can be reported to health authorities. We also call for a coordinated approach led by the African CDC so that we can quickly identify this disease and prevent further loss of lives through a global outbreak.
Dr. Akili Kishugi Francis, the coordinator of a Kinshasa-based NGO, Action Asante, says stronger action is needed, especially when symptoms of the disease manifest.
This includes rigorous and unhygiene, drinking water, the isolation of suspected cases, and compliance with the instructions given by medical teams present. We also raise awareness on the importance of quickly reporting any suspicious symptoms like fever, cough, runny nose, anemia to health authorities.
Sufferers of the disease also suffer headaches and breathing difficulties. The Africa CDC says the disease is affecting mainly young people, many of them children under 5 years old. Dr. Kasia noted that having labs in different parts of the DRC is important, not just for this new disease, but also for other subsequent outbreaks.
You see the difference between number of cases and confirmed cases, because we have a major issue regarding the lab. We need to have the strong lab capacity in DRC. Because of this lab issue, but also the distance, DRC is a big country, but infrastructures are not at the ideal level. Less than 35% of all samples are reaching labs in the 48 hours recommended. It means we are facing the quality of the samples, and this one is a major issue we need to address quickly.
Meanwhile, the DRC continues to fight the mpox outbreak, which has affected 20 African countries, according to Africa CDC. They have recorded 62,171 cases and 1,200 deaths since January 2024. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
And now it's time to count the dollar. Game change. No more knocking for the rest. I'll log with the upgrade. Lamborghini swagger. Me and Kak for the holiday. Baby, let me jump. Fine breeze. Now in the blow, now me lotty. Cause me pockets so they lose cheese. Never. BSK say menace, less feast. Now the level down, only collect ice creams. Done for this thing, me na dada. Me na dada. Papa na the game, me na fada. Me na fada. Juno on the beat, you a killer. Let me give him a dope track. It's something to remember. Fire let know the lamp. Now we gonna see a cancer. The VIP with my nigga Rara. Pay more say make we enjoy one life. 2024 and stress the boy, but I survive. Ready this thing when you do, don't bong yummy height. You bubble don't tall. You make me head big, now the boy draw the fly like kite. You look me the go. Now air to me, then they call me the dynamite. Opa, ten. Cause anytime I come on, snap bang I the odds the lights. Off the light. There we go. Never like it, I don't go. I can't act like me na bolo. Me arms white, I cover. And now it's time to counsel the dollar. We got fuel the plane, and make it take off. Make it take off. First class to me, why name it your love? Name it your love. Summer pinch, man, the weight gets a pinch. The drip, put my valley up, this guy, man, it's a bad off. Yeah, bad off. The tip on me, cigar, it's lighter than 10. Shot the smoke, we are puffed on me, Cuba. Me, Cuba. Sand up guy in face, Cuba, like a Miba. One come behind, safe to this fine boy, Cuba. Sing is all where I pass, now we jump, show me boys, and they shine me glass for clear vision. Clear vision. Sing is all when I enter the booth, summer beats, the beats again, 12 with extension. With extension. Accent, too. Accent, too. Taste here fresh, but the other guy in swaggy accent. Now I sent to Sammy Colon smell dope. If I pass you, yeah, left you make sense. But it's just what you do, don't want yummy height. You make me head big, now the boy draw the fly like kite. You look me the go. Now air to me, then they call me the dynamite. Opa, cause anytime I come on, snap bang, I the odds the lights. Off the light. There we go. Never like it, I don't go. I can't act like me na bolo. Me arms white, I cover. And now it's time to count the dollar. Yeah, but like I don't go. I can't act like me na bolo. Me arms white, I cover. And now it's time to count the dollar.
She rocking Gucci and Dior. She looking better than girl knows. Wherever she goes, she just killing with the pose. Catwalk dicks and her time is unbraced. And good God almighty, this Titiana Rose. Brady boy, Johnny Cole. Must dig on water. One tap on the tumba, let go the beats butter. No other chick better. Her top, Ferragam, when at the bottom, you the city. Damn, you not look to you a big fashionista. You're an illister. You're setting the record like you work for a rister. Come a little closer. I can be your customer. Guarding your body, girl, your fragrance is monster. Dior, Vuitton, girl, you ahead of the race, now you carry baton. Gucci, Prada, then I'll be able to catch you, you balance them with Giaga.
She rocking Gucci and Dior, she looking better than before. Me, I go on so well, she go. Designer, designer, with girly classy, that girl a designer. Y'all just say she fine, she fine.
Ameniumba mimi kanitofautisha na wale. Ameniumba amenipa uthamani.
Uthamani.
Mwenye uwezo mwenye nguvu naye mwamini. Amenifanya mimi ningani. Amenivusha amenitoa majangani. Sio kama mimi mwema sana. Ama nina mengi ya kumridhisha. Na mipango mingi na mimi mabaya wanaomba sana, ila kwa uwezo wanabatilisha. Wanashangaa shangaa hawaamini. Hani ya katikati ananifikishaga mwisho wa safari. Anajibu kwa wakati, mana yeye hasinzi wala halali. Kanipa nguvu bila sharti ya kutawala wanyama mbali mbali. Majibu yake kwangu safi, kweli Mungu wangu halali.
Uwepo wako Baba ni wa ajabu, ni wa ajabu. Baraka zako Baba,
baraka zako Baba,
baraka zako Baba,
baraka zako Baba.
Zina majabu, zina majabu. Uwepo wako Baba, uwepo wako Baba. Ni wa ajabu, ni wa ajabu. Baraka zako Baba, baraka zako Baba. Zina majabu, zina majabu.
Alisema niite nitakuitikia. Ni mwombapo Baba hajui nyamaza. Shuhuda zake ni nyingi na mina shuhudia. Kizali nisongapo Baba na niwekeaga mwangaza. Haniachi katikati ananifikishaga mwisho wa safari. Anajibu kwa wakati, mana yeye hasinzi wala halali.
Kanipa nguvu bila sharti
ya kutawala wanyama mbali mbali. Majibu yake kwangu safi, kweli Mungu wangu halali.
Uwepo wako Baba
ni wa ajabu, ni wa ajabu.
Baraka zako
Baba,
zina majabu.
Uwepo wako,
uwepo
Everybody go to breakfast.
Shayo.
Nothing to discuss, oh, cause I did win by default and without any doubt, oh. I'm a me happy adult, oh. I no go feed the girl, I no go feed the girl, it's up, oh. I'm a mind that's really dark, oh. I put my life into my job and I know I'm in trouble. She manipulate my love, oh.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, and from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer King David Vandy and engineer Ndugu Saida Hamdun. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a thief will make friends with darkness to rob the innocent. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.
Came out of the blue, but I'm happy that it's you.